You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Happy Thursday, everybody. As always, I am joined by David Sampson on our Thursday Local Hour. David, thank you so much for joining us. For those that don't know, David is the host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow him on Twitter, too, at David P. Sampson, and always get his – he's not shy about his thoughts. You can always get his thoughts on anything in the world of business or really anything going on. He's a good social media follow. David, thank you for joining us.
Hey, how you doing? It's doing Thursday, right.
Wow,
man.
Wow, pleasantries at the beginning. David, thanks for joining us. Number one, how are you? No one cares. You don't care how I'm doing. The audience doesn't care how you're doing. We'll just move it along.
I go the opposite way, actually. When people ask me how I am, I actually answer. Mm-hmm. So only when I say fine, people who are close to me know that that's absolute bullshit, right? Because I'm generally not fine. I've got a million things going on in my brain all at once. But every once in a while, I'll actually answer the question. And it's extremely off-putting to people because when you ask it, all you want to hear is a fine, how are you? Fine. And then you move on.
Yeah. No one's genuinely caring about how you are. And as someone that actually takes that question seriously, you must be flabbergasted at the reactions that you get because you realize no one's genuinely interested in how you were doing. They were just waiting for their turn to talk.
Right. And I think what's interesting is I don't mind answering because I like telling people what's in my brain and sort of how it works. And then I like looking at their face when I'm answering and they're thinking to themselves, oh my God, is he going to stop soon? And I don't. I just keep going. Well, but I tell people the truth about how I'm doing.
Let me ask you again, David. Sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, right now, how are you doing?
I'm only okay, and I'm going to tell you why. I had a horrible weekend last weekend, although I had visitors visiting me. When you have house guests, right, 4 days is one too many. Do we agree that generally house guests, three is good. One, obviously too short, you can't get in a rhythm. Two, you're like, oh my God, it's done already. Three, it's sort of like Vegas.
Yes,
you need Vegas three rules. Nights.
As soon as you were talking, hard, like, this is Vegas rules.
Right. Hard the first night, hard the third night, early to bed the second night. That's pretty much how it goes.
Hubba hubba.
And so, but one of the, yeah, thank you. Pun not intended, maybe. And I unfortunately had to do something that Judaism, the thing about being Jewish, and maybe I talk about it in a way that makes people smile, is that one of the things that we specialize in is sort of self-actualization of our own sort of anger, frustration, and sadness. That's just our sort of raison d'etre. And in Judaism, when someone dies, you're supposed to grieve for a year, believe it or not. Like when your parent dies, mm-hmm. you don't go out, you don't travel. It's a full year. That's not me. I'm not Orthodox, but that's how it's supposed to go. And then after a year, you unveil a tombstone. You go back to the cemetery, unveil a tombstone. So this past Sunday, I had to go to a double unveiling for my father and my sister. And I'd never been to a double because there shouldn't be a double unless there's an accident. but they died so close together of two totally different things that it was just horrible getting the family back together where you're trying to get through grieving and then all of a sudden it all comes right back to you because you're in a cemetery. And then there's sort of a blank where my dad was buried, where my stepmother's going to be, and she's there looking at her own blank on the double tombstone. And so she's freaking out. And then because it's my sister who passed away, my siblings were freaking out, their kids. And I'm just standing there like having an out-of-body experience thinking, I don't want to be here, right? How do I leave? What is the soonest I can leave without being rude to my family or appearing uncaring? That was the calculus in my mind. And that guilt over having that feeling has stayed with me all week. So that's how I am.
I really wish you would have just told me, fine, how are you? I'm sorry for both your losses, though. I'm very sorry.
No, listen.
This is why most people just say, fine, how are you? In fact, when I wasn't fine is when I asked.
Let's start the show over. Yeah, do you want to just start over?
Yeah, my least fine. I'm always answering that question. Perfect. How are you? Like, I just don't want to get into it. But that's where we are. We'll sink into it. David, I always appreciate my time with you. And I'm going to lean on your sports business acumen here. And this is probably something that the audience doesn't really care all that much about. But anytime a sport.
Perfect.
Yeah, let's keep doing all that. That's what this whole entire show has been. Hey, that's when we're at our best. If you think I lost them now, if you think I lost them before, if you think I lost them before, let's talk MLS broadcast rights. Come on.
Oh God.
Yeah. Don't think we'll.
You mean
keep
the
them?
Apple TV streaming? You think people want to know that? Where's Skipper? Yeah, that's like a skit. That's something that Skipper and I would talk about when we're supposed to be much more serious and have gravitas. I'm totally different on the shows I do with you. The local hour with you, I can be jocular and a little crazy. When you're on with Skipper doing a show, mm-hmm. you know, it's got to be a little more buttoned up. I sit up a little more straight. And then when I do nothing personal, it's a mix of the two. So I'm very much, you wonder why I've got weird things going on in my head because you're asking me a Skipper question on the local hour. Am I supposed to answer as though you're Skipper?
I would like for this entire local hour to not actually get into anything and just for our collective idiosyncrasies to completely sidetrack the entire episode.
I think they're quirks, by the way.
Yeah.
I take umbrage to your characterization.
Yeah. You call them quirks. I call them idiosyncrasies. A lot of people have other names for them, especially with us two sharing a Zoom. Likeability factor ain't exactly on 10 here. So,
wait, so these shows don't do well? Is that what you're saying?
No, they do. They do. I've seen the metrics.
So maybe people
like you.
People
are very vocal with their dislike about us, but the numbers the numbers actually say, especially when you and I get together, that they generally enjoy it.
Do you know people in Florida, there was a thing when I would meet with, back in the day, a guy named David Epstein owned the Panthers. I don't know if you remember him. He was, I don't know, one owner ago or two owners ago.
I think he was the owner when I believe he was part of the ownership group when I was there. When Michael Yormark was...
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was running the
you
operation.
Believe?
Yeah. The owner was kind of.
That's so funny that you don't know your owners.
Well, he was barely there. I also think that there was like this weird like Hank Aaron component too. The owners were always a mystery. It was very much Michael Yormark's show. He was a cult of personality.
Did you work directly for him?
Did I work directly for Michael Yormark? It's really hard for me to answer that question because I want to say yes. Well, no, because I want to say yes, but I was an unpaid intern, but I had a corner office because I was doing a full-time job for no money. It was during a lockout, and we let a lot of people go back then. And so, yes, but on the books, no. But I was in meetings, and
I took
directives.
You know what he did, right? So wait, were you one of the people who did these sponsorship deals that made it look like they were making a ton of money when in fact it was all absolute trade and BS and they had no revenue at all? So were you guy?
No, I knew that stuff was going on because Michael Yormark was big on just getting people in the building. Get people in the building and just...
I don't care about average ticket price. Give the tickets away. We used to talk about it. Me and Eric Woolworth and who was running the Dolphins back then? It was way before Tom Garfinkel. He was still with the Diamondbacks. Mike D may have been the one. And we just, Yormark was ruining it for us because he just was giving tickets away. And so people started having expectations that that's what you should do in South Florida sports. And it was horrible. Corporate sponsors were worse than season ticket holders because we'd approach the, all of us would approach the same companies and they'd say, well, for the Panthers, we got X, Y, Z, X, Y, plus Z, and A, B, and C. Plus, we got to have sex with the goalie all for $1.50. And we were like, well, no.
Pete Luongo, that's a hell of a pull.
Let's talk a little bit about the sponsor.
No. Beezer wasn't there. He was already canceled. It was Luongo. Well, no one was a goalie. It was a lockout. It was a frustrating time for me when I wanted to work in professional sports, and instead I was working the Eric Clapton concert. But what would he do with the sponsorships? Again, this is all stemming from an MLS broadcast rights question that I asked. We're never going to actually get to it. But it's a local hour. What would Michael Yormark do with these sponsorship agreements? Because I was more in... I was more in sales initially. I was a sales intern at the start, and then I started doing just activations and like marketing events for the team, a team that was locked out. So it was, you can imagine, not very fun for me.
He just didn't care about value, right? He cared about appearance. He cared about the press release, right? He wanted to get the press release out that the Panthers had a new partner. They had a new, like, remember when they did that huge JetBlue thing?
Yeah.
Did you ever look at the JetBlue contract? Right? So when we went to an airline,
I had a lot of responsibilities, but legal department was not one of them when I was in
it. It was not one of them?
No. It might have come across my desk,
on TV.
Honestly.
Listen, during a lockout, people are asked to do things.
There was one time that I approached my cubicle and Steve Goldstein was sitting at my computer. I'm like, what are you doing here? And he was like, what are you doing here? He was very, he handled it as kindly as he could, but it was an odd time in hockey history.
Wait, were they saving money by having two people work per chair?
That it was so goddamn bizarre. It was, people were... Before, when I'm bad with names. When I finally learned someone's name, they were probably getting let go. It was such a transient operation. Very few people from who were there at the start of my internship were there by the end of it. It was kind of sad. The lockout was very difficult. You've probably been in situations where there have been mass exoduses before. I don't know how you ran the Marlins, but right off the bat during a lockout, you. Professional sports franchises can be cutthroat like anything is, but especially during the lockout, like, man, that was a really hard baptism by fire. It made me not want to work in sports.
So the problem with lockouts, right, there's no revenue, so you're told by Major League Baseball, or when you, at least in baseball, and I know Bettman did the same in hockey, they actually want your operating plan. So all the teams submit their operating plan to the commissioner's office for exactly what you're going to do, what your headcount is, where you're going to have savings, who's going to be furloughed, who's not, because they need to keep track of every team's finances because they're going to the banks to borrow money to sustain them during the course of the lockout or the strike, so owners don't feel pressured to give in to players' demands just to start making money again. And so part of what you do is any revenue-producing jobs, they really aren't necessary. Any service jobs aren't necessary. Any marketing jobs aren't necessary because you're not doing any of that. And you bring your baseball down to a bare minimum because there's nothing going on, so you don't need scouts. So we would submit this list. We'd have to prepare it all the time. Every time a new CBA was being negotiated, you prepare it even in the event there is no lockout and strike, which we never had. Right? Because Bud Selig had labor peace until Rob Manfred didn't this past time. But what's interesting about the Panthers and Michael Yormark is what they did, it wasn't during the lockout that I'm referring to, because that we would have understood. It was during actual operations of their team where they did not value their product in a way that made us happy, the rest of the professional sports teams in Miami. And we would not even meet together. We formed a group, like the four presidents, and no one wanted to meet because we were so angry because it was hurting our business. We'd go in and talk to an airline. They'd be like, hey, look what the Panthers are doing. Can't you match that? And we'd be like, no. Are you crazy? Like, that's not how to build a business. People wanted me, Bud Selig wanted me to give away more tickets to Marlins games. And we explained to him that if you give away tickets, you will never get your average ticket price back up. And we will never get off revenue sharing. But he didn't care. He just wanted attendance.
Well, the optics of Marlins games always came, those bright orange seats always came back to haunt you. You might have acquiesced to that request, though, if you owned and operated your building. Wouldn't you have? But getting more getting more people in, you weren't getting a big cut of parking. You weren't getting a huge cut of concessions. The juice wasn't worth the squeeze for you guys.
Mm-hmm. So here's a little nugget. the more money people spend on tickets, the more money they spend on F&B and M.
Makes sense.
The people who you give a ticket to for zero or a dollar, they come in with their own baggie of peanuts. They come in with their own water and a Camelback, and they do not, they generally spend zero. So what we would look at is by section and then by ticket price. Who's doing what? Who's spending what? Which concession stand has the most revenue during a particular game? That's why all of these areas, like the buy, kids getting free, teams try to do, right? It's a big deal when they announce it. All 11-year-olds getting free. It's a terribly crushing economic decision to do that. And you do it for that one moment of PR. And your mark was all about that one moment of PR. But at the end of the day, it leads to you can't sustain that. And the Panthers, to this day, right, they have a hard time with their business model. And it's been years and years, and it's been very hard for them to recover, even with them being as good as they've been.
It's been a huge hole to dig themselves out of because it's hard for me to justify paying parking for that place. I never had to pay parking for this. Why is everything so expensive now? The Panthers experience used to be such a great bargain for someone that was losing money at the time because he was recovering from his unpaid internship that put him in quite the hole. They did have prestigious. There was something to it because their partners were very prestigious. They had a Lexus private club that I was a part of the launch for. They had a lot of big time partnerships and made you think that that Michael Uhrmark was killing it, but it was all smoke and mirrors.
It was all smoke and mirrors. There's no doubt about it. Now Matt Caldwell and Vinny Viola are doing a much better job, but they realize how hard it is. The Panthers were always known as the hash mark, is how the other teams we'd all refer to the Panthers.
Wow.
Because hash mark is what their TV revenue was, their ratings were, their attendance. Remember the Marlins, for all of the fun that people make of our attendance, we had more real people at games over a season than the Heat did. Now, of course, you play twice as many games, but what's the difference? If you just look at the number of people who went through the turnstiles in Miami, the Marlins got more, and we all got more than the Dolphins, obviously based on games. But the reality is the Panthers just never were able to. And one of the things about the Panthers that I didn't understand when I moved to Miami from Montreal, I didn't understand the two-stadium solution down here. I did not understand why Mickey Arison and Wayne Huizenga could not get their act together because I didn't understand the Broward v. Dade issue at all.
Yeah.
And it took about a month in 2002 when I came to Florida, meeting with enough people in Miami, the hatred for Broward.
Yeah.
Like the view of going to Broward is like a New Yorker's view of going like to Idaho. It might as well have been a 4-hour plane ride away. And I never really understood it. We're Staten, right? I didn't want to say anything because I love the former Staten Island borough president. He follows me on Twitter. He loves nothing personal. But yes, growing up as a New York City person, Staten Island was, who goes to Staten Island?
Hey, everybody, it's Mike. And typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right. You crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Have you ever wondered if Chet Holmgren might be a descendant of Abraham Lincoln, or if a UFC fighter could beat an alien in a fight? You might have not, and that's okay. I probably have thought about the UFC one, to be honest. But Shea Serrano and Jason Concepcion from the Six Trophies podcast have. If you love basketball, and more importantly, if you love fun, you got to listen to Six Trophies, where Jason and Shay serve up the biggest moments from all around the NBA with their brand of unbridled joy, banter, and pop culture side quests. Each week, they hand out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities. Stuff like the Denzel Washington and Training Day trophy, given out to the player or team having the best week around the NBA. Or the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy for the team or player that just can't get it together. Plus a bunch more trophies for all the good, bad, or just plain head scratching moments from all around the NBA. This playoff season, you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Well, every time I drive up to the Drive Pink, honestly, going to the Sunrise Arena is so much closer than driving up to Drive Pink and the former Lockhart Stadium where Inter Miami play. That is
because you take 95 versus 75.
No, I do.
To get to Sunrise,
I've tried it all. It is all so far. It is very difficult.
Have you tried going through Naples?
Yeah, dude. What is frustrating is, at least the Panthers got it right from this respect. They leaned into the Broward stuff. They are Broward County's team. I think eventually the natural progression, I know they have a training facility that they're opening in downtown. I've actually seen, in being in Detroit and other metropolises that have new arenas, really revitalized downtown areas. I do really hope that in the future the Panthers make a move a little more easterly and try to revitalize that Fort Lauderdale downtown. I kind of like that it's a Broward County thing. They never tried to sell me that it was a Miami thing. There was occasional marketing stuff, and they do like watch parties down south. They're not going to punt on the Dade County sports fan, not at all. But they prioritize Broward County, and I kind of like that about them. They keep it real, whereas David Beckham is still saying that Inter Miami play in Miami. He was promoting a Ronaldinho, Roberto Carlos thing. He's like, I can't wait for this game to be in the heart of Miami. It's like, what are you talking about? This is so far.
Did that Inter Miami Stadium get built yet? Is it done? It's
like,
ready to go? They're opening it next year with Messi or something? Is that where we are?
Man, it's hard to – I can't even push back. I'm a season ticket holder, and yes, laugh at our expense. I do think we're close.
How old will your daughter be when that stadium opens? Will she be in college? I think that's the question.
Messi's going to happen a hell of a lot sooner than the stadium's going to happen.
You think Messi's going to play in Fort Lauderdale?
Yes.
Okay.
And remember the last time we had one of these? Remember the last time we had one of these face-offs where you didn't know I had sources? Yes.
Oh, I forgot about all your sources.
Yeah.
No. I agree that Messi's coming, and I understand the entire business deal. It makes perfect sense. But talk about blowing your wad. Bringing Messi in to not open a new ballpark, a new stadium, it makes zero sense. But by the time it opens, you need to have, you know, the wheelchair division or the old man's division.
Well, I guess when Freedom Park does open, the idea is go out and get another star and help, whether Messi's still on the roster at that point or you get whatever the Messi comp is of the available free agents. And that leads me to the initial question.
Yes, we got there.
Which is why the hope is, now, on the scope of this 10-year deal, it's still a very long term that MLS signed with Apple. It does bring in a significant more amount of money, which hopefully...
How do you know that? Wait, how do you know that?
Because they weren't being paid much of anything under their previous agreement. And
what's the price tag on this? But, Mike, listen.
Is this all eyewash? Is this all smoke and mirrors?
Yes. Really? Can I explain what they did?
Yes.
They basically they took the streaming rights away from all the individual teams.
Yeah.
It's what MLB's trying to do, but the teams won't let them because the teams can exploit their own digital rights better, and the sum of the team's individual streaming rights is greater than the whole. Baseball doesn't want you to think it because it's their way of trying to have better competitive balance. It's their way of helping with revenue sharing, that the Yankees' digital rights would be in a pot with the Marlins' digital rights, which are worth totally different things, Yankees being worth 30 times X, like with the Red Sox, who are charging $30 for NESN and streaming. What MLS did is they're combining all the teams and making it all federal instead of local.
Right. All right. So we're getting into some minutia here. So many people listening in our audience right now may not even be familiar with the deal that MLS just announced with Apple. So let's go back a little bit. What are the main bullet points of this deal? And then let's systematically poke holes into what's eyewash, what's not real money. And let's chew on some of the interesting minutia of this deal that local broadcasts are essentially gone now. There's just a team of national broadcasters, and they're trying to do some innovative stuff with having local radio supplant the audio that they are providing. It's interesting, but let's go through the main bullet points of the deal first.
You're not going to feed yourself on local radio, right? None of the teams anymore feed themselves on local radio. It used to be, right, back in the day, you could get $5, $7, $10 million year by
without even looking at it. Without even looking at it, I can almost guarantee the audience that most of the local radio broadcasts, right, for MLS teams have to be some sort of rev share agreement.
I would say it is the teams buying the time. The Marlins, a major league baseball team, had to do that. We had to buy the time and then sell it ourselves.
I remember.
It was a nightmare because we were competing with teams. It's only a nightmare in comparison. Right, on its own, it's fine. But when you're looking at competing against teams in the NL East or the AL East, wherever you are, who are getting paid a rights fee deal, like bigger than our TV deal for their radio deal, you get green with jealousy. But Major League Soccer decided, you know, they're trying so hard to get the value of these franchises higher and higher. And they're trying somehow to explain this increase in asset valuation by a concomitant increase in revenue. Yeah. Yet,
are they,
there's not...
David, let me stop you right there. They are succeeding in that, though. The values of these MLS franchises, I know a lot of very successful people that are trying to get in on MLS ownership because it seems to be a really good investment.
So we don't know whether it's a good investment yet. We do know that it is becoming sexier to own, but we also know the people who are buying them generally are those who are trying to corner the sports market in their particular city. So it's very common when you find an owner of one of the professional sports teams also owning the MLS team.
Generally, as a
general matter, that's correct.
Yeah,
obviously, in Miami, that's not the case.
Kroenke owns the Colorado franchise. The Hunts own an MLS team, I think.
Kansas City.
Well, I don't even know if they own the Kansas City or if they own the Dallas franchise. I have to check. But there's a lot. Kraft owns a New England Revolution, as he owns a Patriots. So you're right in that respect, as you always are, David.
No, I'm rarely right when it comes to MLS because I view my issue with MLS, the reason I didn't want to go into business with them, we were trying to build a stadium for them down at the Orange Bowl. And I thought the only way it would be successful is if we had David Beckham sort of as the face of the franchise down here doing stuff in Miami, and he wouldn't agree to any of that. He didn't want to be, you know, married to making appearances and to selling tickets and to doing things. He really was much more concerned with the pitch. I think that's right. Am I saying it right?
It's a field.
He was concerned with what was happening on the field.
Well, the Inter-Miami...
But don't you say pitch?
You do, if you're English or pretentious like Chris Whittingham.
So what do we say? We say on the field?
You can say the soccer field. Pitch is the verbiage.
What does Jessica say when a F1 car goes to get gas and change tires? What does she call that?
I don't know. Is that a pit stop? That seems like a pit stop.
So I thought it was a pit stop, but then you watch Drive to Survive and it's called boxing. Box.
Oh, that's what that is. I've always seen that.
So I wonder what Jessica says, talking about being pretentious. Do you think it's pretentious just because people actually know something different? Like when I call it the pitch, if it's really called the pitch, does that make me pretentious? Or is that what it's called?
If someone calls it the pitch in front of like a bunch of soccer agnostics, it does kind of seem like, showing off. Comes off that way.
What's it called, the new uniforms that come out, right? Isn't that called the kit?
Called the kit.
Now, is that pretentious too?
I did to the uninitiated, I guess.
Interesting. Well, then what do you call it?
I call them kits.
Why do you sound so defeated? Am I touching a nerve here?
Well, because most of the people have already checked on this because we're talking soccer, and I don't want to make them feel more alienated when I call something kits. It's just I feel like if I do that to someone that doesn't like soccer, I'm just pushing them further away. When I want my goal is to grow the game, bring more people in the tent. Let's all
do you know why people listen to you every day on the Le Batard Show? because you entertain them. It's not that they agree or want to hear about everything you're talking about. Yeah. They're here because you've built loyalty. So we could talk about grass growing and we'll get comments like, God, those two are idiots. Or, oh my God, I couldn't stop laughing with those two. Mm-hmm. So what you don't want, and now we're going full circle before I get back to MLS, to the Panthers. The Panthers, the hash mark issue is that there's apathy galore in Miami for the Panthers. And one thing I did when I met with employees of the Marlins, I'm okay with people hating us. I'm okay with people loving us. I'm not okay with people ignoring us. And I was always fine with any negative press, any positive press, just bring it. I want coverage. I want minutes at the local news. I want hits, etc. The Panthers struggle like crazy for that, as does Inter Miami, by the way.
Yes, and they need a star desperately because their timeline is all off. The huge chunk of their passionate soccer fan base is getting worn down by this drive. I'm at every game, mostly because I can't sell them because there's not a lot of interest, and it's hard. And on top of that, team's been so uneven. Not they made the playoffs their first year, but it was only because it was an expanded COVID field, and it has not gotten off to a great start. That being said, though, the business aspect is probably booming, especially because of the unprecedented huge discount that David Beckham had in terms of being able to start that franchise. I think it was like $25 million for an expansion.
$25 million. Yeah. Well, that was the valuation assigned.
He's made so much money off of this investment already. I mean, he hasn't cashed out.
Because,
but in valuation, he had, like, this is going to be a very profitable endeavor for David Beckham by the end of it.
He doesn't own a huge amount. Is that breaking news? Like, he does not own a huge amount of Inter Miami.
No, and it's the Moss family.
Just FYI.
Yeah, the Moss family, yes, but on the ROI on the chunk that he does own is going to be impressive because he got it at the cost that it was. But the Moss family has made, they bought out Clare of his shares. They have the majority of shares now. They're operating that franchise. And soccer franchises in America, in MLS, their valuations have gone up. And every time a new team enters the league, the expansion fee is even higher. There seems to be a lot of smart people were trying to exploit that market inefficiency in terms of sports ownership. And MLS was a good marketplace. But the one issue that MLS always faced, while their attendance numbers were pretty good, and while they had a very passionate fan base, they ran into the same thing that soccer generally runs into: getting people comfortable, expanding the base, getting them in the tent. People feel very strongly about soccer one way or another. I have a fear with this Apple deal that it'll push people away and it won't help grow the game. The counterpoint to that is, well, they'll get more money off of this deal, which will bring in more stars. More people watch more stars. Therefore, the sport will grow here. Tell me what you think of that.
I want to know the over-under of the take any football fan or baseball fan or NBA fan. How many members of the Inter Miami team could they name? A Heat, Dolphin, or Marlins fan? Any of the three, right? How many Inter Miami players can they name, would you guess? Over-under. I'm going to say the over-under is 1.2. So if someone can name two players, that's the over. One player is the under.
Yeah, casual sports fans in Miami, they might leak out an Higuain, but...
Not casual. I'm talking a real Dolphins fan. Not a casual Dolphins fan, like
Inter
a real
Miami?
Dolphins fan.
A real Dolphin fan?
A real Dolphins fan, a real Marlins fan, the people who go to 81 games, a real Heat fan.
Yeah,
how many players on Inter Miami can they name?
One is... It's probably 0.9.
And does that stop them from going to games, or is it the fact that they don't have an interest in soccer? This is what the people are thinking of at Inter Miami when they're doing the marketing and sales, by the way.
I think they might have an interest in going to a soccer match if it looked like a party and if it were nearby. And Inter Miami has struggled with both of those aspects, I think.
It doesn't really have to be nearby, right? People are happy from Miami and down in Kendall and down as far south as you want to schlep up to pro player to go to F1 or to go to Dolphins games.
That's not that far.
Right? If it's an event.
It's not that far.
It can be pretty far. I mean, how far is it from pro player to where the Orioles did spring training? If there's no traffic, it is 20 minutes.
I routinely made this drive. I am telling you, there is nothing like, unless you've done it, going from Kendall to Lockhart Stadium. it is, I pass Dolphin Stadium, I pass Hard Rock Stadium, and I'm like, my God, I'm only a third of the way into my journey. When I pass downtown Fort Lauderdale, I am still, when I pass Fort Lauderdale International Airport, I am still very far away from the Drive Pink Stadium where Inter Miami.
It's right off Cypress Creek on 95.
It's off Commercial Boulevard.
I know where it is.
It is far.
Well, it's in between.
It is far as F. It's really freaking far. I'm gonna say the F word.
Not going every day. You're only going how many games? 10 a year?
There's a couple of weeks where I'm going to two fixtures a week. There's a couple of there's.
You just said fixture. You're pretentious.
God, I did it again. In June, look, I was able to. Here's how. In June, there was, because of an international break, there's only one home game. It's this Saturday. I sold my tickets at a huge loss. But it's just a mitigating losses when it comes to my Inter Miami tickets. I was so grateful to have the respite of not having to go to these games because it's so far. And I love going to the games. I happen to think that the product is, the games in terms of going to the games are great. I love my seats. I love the camaraderie that I have with my season ticket holders. And I like that I'm putting in the sweat equity in this team that when it does hopefully one day turn around, I get to say I was a founding member and I was there during the days of bloated Gonzalo Higuain because I'm a crazy fan that way.
And you won't go once a month? Once a month is too much for you.
Mitigating losses. My wife and I, we have a good time at these games too. Like, it's something that
I'm not understanding what you're saying. Then once a month is nothing. I can't believe what you're hearing.
There was once this month, but there are months that I on my calendar where I'm going to the stadium like seven times in a month, and it's just like I can't do this.
Okay, so that's tough. Every 4 days. So yeah, that's too many games.
Well, yeah, it depends. Like if they have a midweek fixture, the worst weeks are when they have like a Wednesday game and a Saturday or Sunday game. It's just like, I can't do this. I don't. The midweek fixture.
But you're guaranteed to go to Freedom Park, right? Freedom Park for sure.
Oh, God.
Every game.
Do you know how many times? Every time I go to the airport, I'm like, oh, my God, if Inter Miami were only here. Every time I pass by the airport on my way to an Inter Miami game, I say the F word. I scream it out loud because I know that ahead of me, I still have 80 more minutes of driving. It is bad.
So location matters.
Location is all that matters. Especially, look, the uniforms are pink, man. We're referring to this team as Miami. Miami is a cultural football epicenter. It's got to be in Miami. It's got to be. It's not.
I'm not saying it shouldn't be in Miami. I'm saying that if people aren't going to Broward and will all of a sudden switch to Miami, that's the feeling that we were told by people in the community and focus groups about the Marlins. People don't want to schlep to pro player, even though now you're saying by comparison that's better than Fort Lauderdale. But that said, once you move down to Little Havana, it's like heaven on earth. Everyone's going to come.
Yeah. I don't know if my biggest fear with Inter Miami, David, is that they've poisoned the well. Messi will be a hell of a hood ornament, though, and I think it would offer a reset for a franchise that I think sorely needs one. When you go there, it's like the game is in Miami, from the supporters section singing in Spanish from the kickoff through 90 minutes. They have such a great supporters section, man, and like the music, the in-game entertainment, the colors. This team has always represented itself as a Miami entity, and it is so goddamn far away from Miami. It's I feel like I have to pack a bag every time I go there. So they've never really closely aligned themselves with the Broward fans. So I don't think that they have to fear the blowback that you guys got. You realize that you had a sizable amount of your fans when you moved from Hard Rock Stadium. A sizable amount of your fan base was 954, and thought that
we barely drew. We barely drew. People have this illusion. Listen, during the playoffs, you get 60,000 people. It was so super exciting. The day we clinched the wild card, we made up the attendance, of course, that day. But the day we clinched it was like the Saturday, the last day of the season, second to last day of the season. There were about 11,000 people in the park.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to if we won, we were going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I was there.
So what were we turning our back on?
It was hot.
It's right. So we got to do a roof. Got to have air conditioning. People don't care. Why aren't you opening the roof? Keep the roof open. Oh, it's Jeffrey doesn't want to mess up his hair. We got to keep the roof open. It's so beautiful.
Who did we clinch against? Was it the Phillies that we clinch a playoff spot against?
I don't remember. Isn't that amazing? I have no recollection of that.
But I remember the game.
It was the last Saturday.
I remember the Randy Johnson game. That was a big moment. You guys got like 30,000 fans for that game. That was on ESPN.
Because that was an event.
Yeah.
That was Randy Johnson against Dontrell Willis.
Yeah. Dontrell was a
big... So we're talking about events.
Yeah, he was a big boost for you, right, attendance-wise. When Dontrell Mania was there, like, you would see a sizable increase, like you did with Jose Fernandez. When they took the bump, there was an absolute star quality that those players had. They drew, quantifiably.
So why is baseball now going to a place where starting pitching doesn't matter as much?
It's a bad place,
man. Deep into games.
Is it a bad place?
Because you think fans go for starting pitching.
Dude.
It's interesting.
Roy Halladay was in town. I wanted to watch Roy Halladay. Cliff Lee was in town. I wanted to watch Cliff Lee. Josh Johnson was playing against either of them. My ass is in that seat. I'm telling you right now, like big-time marquee pitching matchups, it's a thing of the past. It really is. I don't even get excited about it in the postseason because I know I'm barely going to see these guys. Why? I loved big-time pitching matchups.
I just wonder whether we're dinosaurs. I just don't know the answer to that, right? Because what we sit around all day and what they're doing in soccer and what MLS Don Garber is doing, especially with this streaming deal, right? He's trying to project what his fan base wants. That's so when they collect the streaming, they put it on Apple, what they say is, we're not going to, oh my God, what's the word when you're upsetting somebody?
Alienate.
Thank you. Thank you, Coca. We are going to alienate fewer people than we're going to draw in. So we're going to put all the rights together. We're going to do this deal with Apple where people are going to have to have the app. Remember, you don't have to have Apple TV Plus. Yeah. You just have to have the app. There may be some games behind a paywall, but the majority of games, just download the app.
And if you're a season ticket holder, you get the games for free. They're cutting out local broadcasts. Teams can do a pregame or postgame that give you your local flair. If you want more local flair on the actual broadcast, you can opt for Chris Whittingham's radio broadcast voice on the television. It is changing the model, and I do think that they're alienating a good amount of folks. In your mind, though, is this a good deal? Is it a good deal for MLS, and is it a good deal for the patrons, the people that would be interested in watching soccer?
Well, those are two different things. Mm-hmm. I think that the way the world is now, everyone used to complain when Major League Baseball playoffs were on 10 different channels or the NCAA tournament. You had to, is it on True TV or is it on this TV or that TV? What game and where do you find it? In this day and age, you go on your TV and you go to the menu and you can sort by sports and you can click. Like if you have Hulu, every game that's on, you don't even know what channel the number of the channels are. In the old days with DirecTV, you had to know 206 is ESPN. So remember that. Right? These days, that's done. So I think, wait, what was your question again?
No, I'm just kidding. Is this a good deal for MLS?
It is a good deal for MLS because they are getting more money than they ever dreamt of for streaming rights. There's no way to know, though, what would happen if they kept the deal separate. And that was my original point. If you gave every team the right to sell its own streaming rights, would it add up to more than Apple is paying them for the exclusive right to the entire league? And in terms of fans, they're good either way, whether it's streaming on Apple or Amazon or Netflix or just on regular streaming of Peacock, right? Either way, fans find what they want to watch.
Correct me if I'm wrong. There's also additional packages from within their package that they can still sell out to other buyers potentially. I heard that like Univision and ESPN were still on some form of the package.
Because this is streaming, but the funny part is ESPN, you think they're going to bid what they were going to bid for the package when they can't get the streaming rights to use ESPN Plus, which they're trying to promote and eventually move everyone from ESPN to ESPN Plus? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing when you don't have your streaming rights to sell. When we were negotiating with Fox to do a TV deal, we had to have our streaming rights to give to them or they were not going to give us the deal that we were able to negotiate. So streaming rights were critical. And now you are sort of, you're bastardizing your rights, hoping that you're getting more money in totality, but there's no way to actually know.
Will the league grow substantially because of this deal? I mean, I think if you look at the sport, if you look at soccer as a whole, there's kind of like a sustainable growth model there already. It's catching, it's making gains on all the other sports. And we have a big World Cup 4 years from now that the United States is hosting, and that'll do more for boosting the MLS than anything. I was actually really surprised, David, to see that they locked themselves into a 10-year term, knowing that that World Cup might reinvigorate soccer passion in this country.
Apple's not doing that deal without getting certainty of a decade, right? You're not, I mean, you have to look at the other side as well. They're not going to pay the annual price that, that MLS needed for a short-term deal just to be left at the altar should it end up working out. And again, it's such a small deal for Apple in terms of total amount of money that if they're wrong, they'll be done with it and that they'll write it off and their stock price won't even move by a penny. So when they look at the risk reward, there's a tremendous amount of upside. But in terms of gaining fans, my question to you is this: do you think people will turn on Apple TV, they'll see a little thumbnail that says MLS game, and they'll say, oh my God, I didn't plan on watching that. I was going to watch The Morning Show, no. Or I was going to watch Severance. Now I'm going to watch the Seattle play Inter Miami.
No.
Is there a, how, do you think that's a real thing? Because I do not.
No, but Apple's pretty good at marketing. So let's see what happens when they put their marketing dollars behind this. Maybe I don't watch the MLS. I don't watch the MLB package that they have on there. And I have a friend that's calling the games. It just seems like such a to-do to just go to that.
That's
platform.
Why you don't watch.
Well,
seriously, because it's a
no,
to-do.
Well, no, it's, I also why I don't watch is I don't like baseball. That's okay. That's the main reason, which is why.
By the way, I'm fine. But yeah. Don't say it's a to-do.
It is.
Because going to a streaming service is not a to-do.
It's a to-do.
It's every,
a to-do it's when
normal.
It's Apple. It's like the easy. Seventh one that I'm checking.
Okay. So that is not how the streaming services look at this. They've already gotten past the fact that no consumers say it's a to-do. Mm. It's about the quality, right? The quality of the entertainment and all of the different choices.
Well,
and everyone wants to be in the live sports game.
From a quality standpoint, all the games are going to be in 1080p now. Yeah, I mean, you watch some.
That's huge.
You watch some MLS games, and it is. MLS, in some respects, is trapped in the 90s. If you were advising MLS, would you have told them do a shorter term deal, maybe a placeholder deal, and wait till the World Cup year in the United States, and then really cash in?
I believe they're a decade behind the other four major sports. I would have kept the rights with the teams, and not put them together until they're as advanced as MLB is. As an example.
Look at that. It took us an entire episode length to answer this one question no one gave a shit about. David Samson, he reviews something for us every week, whether it's a doc, a movie, a television series, an album, a city, a marathon, a picture from 2003. David, what is your review for this week?
I was going to review Everything Everywhere All at Once, but you haven't seen it, so I'm going to hold off on that. I have to talk about another movie I watched and review that instead. It's a movie about the band A-ha. Do you know A-ha, Mike?
I love A-ha because it takes me back to my childhood and watching MTV and falling in love with that video. Anytime MTV would put out specials recapping the greatest music videos
Take
of all time.
Take on
Man,
me.
It's a banger. You can't sing it too much. But you can do it. It's an absolute banger of a song. It holds up, and so does the video.
Have you watched the documentary about the band?
I'm just learning that there was a documentary about the band. And
it's
I'm
called A-ha the Movie. Okay, ready? I did not know, and I'm happy to admit it in front of this entire audience, I didn't know where they were from.
They're from the UK, right?
Negative.
Where are
Norway.
They from? Norway. No way.
Norway.
No
I
way.
I swear to God.
No way.
They were a group of three guys in Norway who got together. It's the original three guys who are still together to this day. They're touring, and they are crushing it in all these venues with their song, Take On Me, which is their most well-known song, but they have an entire library of music, and they're still making new music. This is A-ha, and it's a bunch of guys who they don't really like each other too well. And they have stayed together because they recognize that apart, they are way, way less valuable than they are together. And so there's no solo efforts, but they are the most famous thing to ever come out of Norway. I mean, other than Salmon. It's major.
What is the most famous thing to come out of Norway? Norwegian cruise lines?
That, except there's not one cruise line based that has the flag of Norway, right, for tax purposes. All the NCLs, all these boats are. I always liked that going to Miami. When I moved there, I'd go down to where the boats dock, like both in Fort Lauderdale and Miami, to just look to see what the name of the country was on the back of the boat, because it was never Miami or Fort Lauderdale.
No. I always thought, what is Norway known for? The Winter Games and I believe...
Lillehammer.
I believe the whale that played Willy in Free Willy died in a fjord there.
I thought he died in SeaWorld in captivity.
No, he
didn't die.
No, he was Willy was freed, and I think there was a... Am I pronouncing it
they
right?
They actually fjord? Freed Willy?
Yeah.
It's a fjord, but they actually freed Willy?
Oh, yeah, there's a
at the end of filming, they freed Willy.
They freed Willy, but it didn't work out great. Got which sick is and what he died they, which, in a Norwegian fjord.
It's what all the zoo people say, right? We can't free these animals. They'll die in the wild. It's like a Jewish mother that doesn't want their kid to move out, right? You can't move out. You'll die out there. Anyway, Aha's from Norway.
Did not know that.
Isn't that crazy?
What an incredible job of disguising those accents.
Only one of them speaks a tiny bit of English.
What?
The other two speak no English.
Dude, like with that like Balkan region... The Nordic region, they actually do, when they sing, Bjork notwithstanding, they kind of disguise their accents. There's a lot of
I don't think it's
great
disguising.
Pop acts that are Swedish that when they sing, there's no discernible accent.
Wait a minute, does Mick Jagger sing with an accent or Nicole Kidman or any of the people who are not from the U.S. all sing without accents? It's the most bizarre thing in the world. I don't get why that is, but it is true. I'm
very confused by it. But then there are some people that do sing with an accent.
Like who?
Lily Allen. There are some singers. I mean, the Sex Pistols. There are people that sing with accents.
David Bowie didn't sing with an accent. I don't know why I just thought of that. Modern love.
I disagree. I think David Bowie had a slight accent when he sung.
I think that if you asked 100 people surveyed, they would 85 to 90 would say David Bowie did not sing with an accent, and the other 10 would not have heard him sing.
How was the movie?
It's fascinating. I think about the four things you just learned.
Yeah. Think about what
no
I just
English,
taught you.
From Norway, they were kids and they wanted to be famous singers.
Yeah.
That was their plan.
That was just their goal, be famous singers. And all they needed was a music video, really.
Take on Me was written before they even started. It was they released it, and that whole video, the whole song, when it was released as a single, it had been in their library, if you will, for years. I just couldn't believe the whole thing. I don't know what took so long to make a movie about them, because to me, they're iconic in the 80s, and people in the 80s are trying to get as much as they can about that era because they miss it so badly. So if you are an 80s person, you watch this Aha, the movie. If you're not and you've never heard of Aha, it's a great movie that explains how people can will themselves. And I reviewed the Coldplay documentary, Head Full of Dreams, on Nothing Personal yesterday. And Chris Martin in the 90s is on video before Coldplay starts with a very definitive goal. We are going to be a famous band. And I'm going to be a famous singer in a famous band. And then he
sings with an accent.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, look at the stars. Look how they shine for you. There's absolutely a thick-ass accent there.
Hold on. Interesting. I just thought it was a falsetto, not an accent.
No.
But that could be right. I'm going to have to listen now.
He
what an experience.
With an accent. Did Who you were at the show that Bruce Springsteen showed up to?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
I almost, I couldn't believe it, actually. And I'm going through something, Mike, while we're here, if you ask me how I am. It's sort of a whole mortality weird thing. And
it's
I
a midlife
guess I understand
crisis,
why.
David.
I think it is. I'm going to go buy a car. But people thought I went through that 4 years ago, and I kept explaining to people, no, it's not a midlife crisis. It's just a divorce. But now, I think now's the midlife crisis that I'm having. Bruce Springsteen gets on stage, and I should be jumping and screaming and in heaven. And all I could think of is, shit, he looks old. Like, that was the first thing in my head.
Yeah.
And that bothered me.
I think the biggest misnomer with midlife crisis, because I had one a couple of years ago, is that you only get one in a lifetime. I think that sells it short. I think that there are a couple of benchmarks within somebody's life. You get multiple midlife crises.
You know, you can't have, you're young. I don't know exactly how old you are. I don't think you're 40 yet.
John Mayer dubbed it a quarter-life crisis.
Yeah, you had a quarter-life a few years ago, not a midlife. I hope to
put it
this way.
Well, I certainly had a crisis.
if it turns out to be a midlife crisis...
I don't give a shit where we judge it on my timeline, but there was certainly a crisis.
Why do we have to label it? Why can't we just say we are in crisis?
I was in crisis.
Are you better?
Am I better?
Are you better?
Are you asking me how I'm doing?
I'm asking how you're doing.
Fine, how are you?
I want to finish by saying, I'm fine, how are you?
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.